tuned directly to David Lee Roth. How about a little fire, Scarecrow? Sie haben sich direkt zu David Lee Roth dazugeschaltet. Wie wäre es mit etwas Feuer, Vogelscheuche?
I'm saying, girl, you really got me now. You got me so I don't know what I'm doing. You're keeping me still, girl. You really got me now. You got me so I can't sleep at night. At least he steals from a great resource, huh?
Yeah.
If you're going to wear gold teeth, make sure it comes from the best mine in Sierra Leone. I give him an A+. More is his achievement. Ah, that's great stuff. Trent Reznor, 9-inch nails. Wow. PETA's going to come after them for the sound of those guitars. That's animal cruelty. I love that. That stuff cracks plaster. Give us a call. That's an amazing song. And I don't care where they got it from. I didn't even write that song. So, boom, you got me. 866-313-3733. We're trying to plug the ceiling. Al, there's a stool in the back there that I brought in. It's in the office there. We're trying to plug up the ceiling like a leaking submarine in here. Get the duct tape. Make sure that the edges are all pulled into shape there, guys. Get the interns and everybody to pull that. Because what we did is we put up plastic bags like crackheads in a window here. And Hutch hasn't been a crackhead for a long time. And he put up duct tape in the wrong places here, and the edges are tearing off.
Right.
No, now it's starting to flood with all that debris everybody's been breathing in here.
You know what it is? It was we're supposed to turn the compressors down. You see how the bags are blown up here?
Yeah, see if the guys in back. Matt, see if the guys in back can shut off the compressors. It's disgusting in here.
We threw the compressors down, and it stopped that happening.
It's lonely at the top because it's so disgusting up here. I want to go back where it's crowded at the bottom. This sucks. Oh, man. No, it's third class from top to bottom here, and what they're doing is they're taking duct tape and trying to close off the vents up above. Great job, Al. Very good. You'll make a great crackhead someday. You'll be able to do the front windows in 30 seconds. When somebody yells 5-0, call Dukes, right? 866-313-3733. If you hear all the noise and the clamor, or actually if Dukes falls into the record collection, it could be a high point of today's programming. You're doing beautifully. Hey, look, if the radio show fails, you've got a future in drywall. Al Dukes, give him a big hand out there. Roth Radio, I'm David Lee Roth. Let's take a call. Al Dukes is in the way, so you pick the caller, Hutch.
How about Rich?
They're all good, and it's a great word. It's a great adjective. Rich, are you there? Rich.
Yeah, this is Rick Rocks, baby. How you doing, man?
Great, Rick. What's cooking?
Just wanted to talk about how this whole rock and roll thing, something that I love, and grew up listening to your music and, you know, Zeppelin and Aerosmith, the riffs, has all turned into pretty much a commercial. It's a jingle. Everything is packaged too neatly, and the sex, the arrogance, the everything that is rock and roll is gone.
I don't know that it's so much gone.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't know that it's so much gone because there was always pop music. There was always, you know, like I say, for every Beatles, there were three Monkees and two Herman's Hermits. For every Led Zeppelin, there were two Rats, one Great White, and a Poison. And I understand that Great White is less one manager who just got sent to prison now or whatever. Okay, so there was always that ratio to contend with. And I think that there's great music bouncing around out there, especially in the flat world that the internet created. Are you not hearing anything new that appeals to you at all?
Actually, I'm in a band right now that everybody says, you know, it sounds like rock music that I used to listen to, and that what I miss, and we've been doing pretty good. I mean, I'd say the name of the band, but I'm not here to promote. If I could say it off the air, maybe you could check it out.
Well, you can say anything you want on Roth Rick. Radio. Go ahead. What's the name of the band?
My name is it's Valve, V-A-L-V.
Valve what?
Valve Act.
Valvac.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it. Where are you actually calling from, friend, that you don't find new music that appeals to you? Where are you calling from?
I used to live in Boston. I'm living up in Raymond, New Hampshire now. I'm up here with the banjos and the ukuleles out on the front porch.
You sound like you're being abused musically.
I am. So I got to do something about it myself. So I grab my guitar.
I think probably, you know what I think happens? It's sort of like, I think a classic example or best way to describe this is the Rolling Stones. I don't think the Rolling Stones have changed much in the last 30 years at all. We changed. We grew up. Our values changed. Our lives adopted all the frictions of family, poverty, wealth, poverty again, then wealth. Then poverty. We're the ones who grow up and coming out of the high school into junior college and everything who start having to deal with terrible, terrible things like jobs and relationships. And then we change as people. We don't see it the same. It's just like the first time we saw Andy Warhol's soup cans. We thought, wow, that's an interesting idea. 30 years later, you grew up and you go, cool, soup cans. I'm hungry. Thanks for calling. 866-313-3733. I don't know. Pick another one. Get up, whoever, Hutch. I can barely see it from here.
I've always liked the name Sid.
Sid. Yes, let's see if he talks viciously about Robert Plant. Sid, you're on Roth Radio. Go ahead, friend. Hit it up.
Morning, Dave. How you doing?
Great, Sid. What's cooking?
What I wanted to comment on was that you lifted the track, Plant's track, right before he was going to break.
Yeah. And we played the track, correct? What's the issue?
I think he said it was about to get good there.
Oh, it was about to get good? Because we got all the way to the end of the third verse, and you're saying that there was an actual chorus lurking around in there.
Yeah, he was breaking through the Zeppelin-esque type of Banshee deal.
Okay, so I got out just in time. No, this is a pitfall. This is a temptation for individuals who come from really, really famous bands. Look what Bobby Brown did about coming out of the first edition or new edition, whatever it was. He made a place for himself. I tried to do that coming out of the Van Halen band, but I'm very hesitant to start discussing my musical background because I don't compare any of this to what I do. I listen purely as a fan sitting in the nosebleed seats with all the rest of everybody in the peanut gallery.
That, Dave, that what you're talking about, like how we have changed. Back when I was younger, I used to listen to a 1.5 minute introduction to a Led Zeppelin song and love it. Now I don't got that kind of time anymore either.
You know, hurry up. I call it focused listening. You know, I call it critical listening. The only place I ever get to critically listen to music now is in the car. I look forward to traffic. Give me a traffic jam. I'll shut off the phone. And it's the only time I even listen to a half of an album in one fell swoop. I can't remember, you know, if I'm not in the car doing that, I can't remember the last time I actually listened to 6 tracks from an album in a row. And I'm what's called an audiophile. I buy CDs, records. You guys know. You've seen where I live. The entire roof is being held up by stacks of CDs. And I buy it exclusively for the music. I don't collect vinyl. I don't care much about collecting the artwork, but the actual music contained on the CDs, I spend thousands and thousands. Everything you hear in the background is my personal collection, whatever. And I think that, I forget my point. 866-313.
Never have time to listen to it.
3733. No, you never get time to listen to it. So I'm wondering, you know, I'm wondering if he's actually ever going to get past the Led Zeppelin kind of issue here. You know, anytime somebody steps away from a band and they're going to reference it, why don't you just go back to the band? It's like when the Van Halens work with whoever the latest singer is. It sounds like B-list classic Van Halen. Why don't you just go back, do your 90 days. You go from zero to hero in one summer vacation, and I'll meet you here at 6 in the morning, Sasha. Roth Radio, David Lee Roth. Talk to me about 9 Inch Nails, Joe, number 13, Hutch. 866-313-3733. Go, Joe.
Hey, Dave. How you doing? Good morning.
What's up?
9 Inch Nails, Trent Reznor, is one of the best musicians, innovators of my time, I'd say.
I'm going to agree with you. Why do you think he is?
Well, he doesn't get the respect he deserves because he's not a commercial band. And you know,
isn't that important, though? If you get the respect that you deserve, don't you become like Cher or Sting?
Yeah, I don't know. I would disagree with that because I think he should get the respect that he deserves.
Yeah, but in the real world, you never get the respect you deserve if you're really upsetting, really contributing, really productive, really cool, really unique. You will never get the respect that you deserve while you're alive. One of my favorite headlines in Rolling Stone was about Jim Morrison. It goes, he's young, he's hot, and he's dead. Well, they hated him while he was happening, okay? And when you talk about getting the respect you deserve, usually that means a salute from the established authorities, the record companies, those who are already past being young and skinny. I'd rather be accepted by the underground. Which would you rather be? Get a Grammy or be massively popular with everybody below 14th Street?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Good point. Does that make the music more credible then?
If you believe that art happens inside your skull more than it actually happens on the canvas, if you believe that music works from the inside of you more than actually the fingers on a guitar, like who's being the most artistic with it, then I think, yeah, your perception changes the way things sound, okay? If you perceive of something as being important to your community, you're more prone to like it. If you perceive of somebody being like you are in some way, either looking like you or speaks your language, even more importantly, has lived through a lot of the stuff, a lot of the problems or traumas or the great celebrations that you have, you're more prone to listen more carefully and participate with it. If you don't have that connection and you see it as something from, you know, some foreign country or something like that, then you're going to be way more critical, way less receptive. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree with you, what you're saying. I got one more question, though.
Please.
So then, does winning a Grammy hold no credibility?
No, I think winning the Grammy has a great amount of credibility, but it's not what's called empirical, great word, like an empire. It doesn't dominate all choices. The Grammys is one kind of heavy lifting.
Good company, boy.
Well, it's a good company, and you got a lot of the record companies involved. You got a lot of promotion directors, but also there is a lot of credibility to the public vote that goes into that. But keep in mind that if you're going to appeal to everybody across the board, then you're going to wind up with these kinds of more beigey sounding, more easy stuff. We're listening to songs by bands, just as Sash says, when we listen to Audioslave or whatever, and you said, wow, the rest of the album is much tougher, much whatever. I know some of the guys in the band. I thoroughly expected that. But what they're going to try and sell across the board to Ma and Pa Kettle today is more likely audio-wise to be closer to the kinds of commercials we're seeing on the Super Bowl today. A little cleaner, a little squeakier, a little more hygienic, a little more carefully put, a little more restricted, and a lot more boring. Thanks for calling. 866-313-3733. Do we got time to play one more tune? You want to take on one more tune here?
Yeah, we can do another tune.
Okay, this is Queens of the Stone Age. Lullabies to Paralyze. Love it. Good title here. Little Sister. Little Sister, don't you go. Here we go. This is the name of the song, Little Sister. They're up for Best Hard Rock Performance. And keep in mind, we're going to have Dan Aquilanti from the New York Post calling in at 9 o'clock. We'll get his take on this when we talk Grammys with the New York Post music critic Dan Aquilanti. That's at 9 o'clock. But before he gets here, I want to hear Little Sister. Hit it up, Hutch. Go ahead. I love a good cowbell, huh? God. You know, you just don't hear enough glockenspiel these days either. God, let's throw in a marimba. What the hell, huh? No, this is a lot of ambition. This is a lot of apparent authority in search of a melody and an actual song here.
I think that cowbell sounded too happy. They needed a meaner one.
Do you think?
Yeah, it was kind of...
Well, that's because it's not actually a cowbell. I'm willing to guess that that's Pro Tools working through a G3 computer and that that's been triggered mostly off of a keyboard, okay? But I hear real guitars in there. Not that you have to have real guitars at all. You know, we listen to all kinds of tunes here. But go ahead and play it one more time here. And we'll kind of...
From the top.
Here we go. From the top. There's a trend in British music that I think may have actually started kicking in with David Bowie when he was Ziggy Stardust. And it's a really melancholic, take it from the beginning, and I'll do my version of David Bowie. I don't actually have any lyrics, but it's not going to get in the way. Look at Sasha's look.
Okay,
here we
ready?
Go. Yes, and I'll do the tone. You see if this doesn't sound. There's any child and when it's felt is when it's light. God is when it's light. And that was called When It's Mother's Light. And that's my next track. That's the title of my next album. That's the title of my Sunday mornings, usually. I flunk you. You are out of the class. I give it an F. What do you think? Animal, give it a grade. Give it a grade. Call it a name. Give it a name.
B.
B. What do you think, Sasha? What do you think?
C.
C.
I give it this.
Knock it off, you white mofo. Okay. Little Sister. Queens of the Stone Age. Okay, probably back to the drawing boards, or at least the studio. BYOB. Does that stand for bring your own beer?
Yeah.
Is
bring
that
your
it?
Own bombs.
Bring your own bombs. A political commentary.
Very.
Love it. System of a Down. And this is the track from Mesmerize. Go for it. Can you want to play this? System of a Down. This is up for best hard rock performance. Let's see what they got up into the air. Somebody has a lot of rage. I sense a lot of mid-level fury. Actually, mid-level fury should have been the name of the album. Do you think? I'm sensing a lot of torque there. It also sounds like it's being played backwards really, really fast. Does you agree or disagree? If you slowed that down, what song might that be?
Anarchy in the UK.
It could well be. And is he actually singing lyrics, or is that called not the growl, but the... there's a word for that when you the roar or something
snarl.
Like that. I forget what it's called.
I think he was singing words.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, there's yeah.
And do you actually sing along with these? Do you know the words to this, Sash?
Most of them.
You
are.
Do. Okay, we're gonna play the track again. Sash, you sing along. Okay, here we go.
Here we go.
Here we go.
You ready?
I'm gonna throw your ass out of the room if you do not sing.
After three.
This is beyond insisting. Animal, hold her to the mic.
All right, let's go, Sash. Heat it up, girl.
I'm gonna hold you to the mic like Britney. I'm gonna hold you to the mic. Like Britney Spears holding her infant to the dashboard.
Sasha, after three.
Here
one,
we go.
Two.
Hit it.
Three.
Sing it, baby.
Sorry.
That was a great start, though, wasn't it?
That was an amazing start.
Yeah.
You've got it in you.
A rock star.
Does she actually sing a word? Does he actually
he
sing
says,
a word?
Why do they always send the poor?
And that's what you actually yelled?
It's what I actually yelled.
But it was like in burst mode, is what you... What are you talking about? That was inspirational. Don't go away. We're going to be back with more musical inspiration after this, baby.
They can't believe Jamaica, we have a bobsled team. No people say, you know, they can't believe Jamaica, we have a bobsled team.
Hi, I'm here to offer you an opportunity of a lifetime. We're looking for a sponsor for the first Jamaican bobsled team. Oh!
We have the one, the East and the one, Junior.
I'll pay you a dollar to shut up.
Roth Radio ID. I've got a very, very special guest here this morning. His name is Devin Harris. He's here. He's a three-time Olympian as the captain of my favoriteest ever in competitive sports, the Jamaican bobsled team. Devin, how are you this morning?
Hey, I'm well, David. Thanks for having me, man. We have at least one thing in common.
What is that?
The Jamaican bobsled team is my favorite team as well.
Oh, I'm going to have you tell the story here because, you know, this is Olympic time here.
Yep.
And this is a story that really summarizes an international spirit. This goes beyond technical. This goes beyond strategic. This
yep.
becomes a fury of soul. This becomes a conquest of the impossible by somebody that everybody thought had no chance. Am I correct on this?
That is true. You know, one of the things I totally enjoy and I'm proud of as part of the team, the original team, is that in many ways we epitomize the true spirit of the Olympic movement.
Absolutely. And in fact, you're the only one that I asked for in review of all of the Olympics that are coming up here.
Wow.
We have a meeting after every show here, and we talk about the guests and everybody. And, you know, they were talking about some of the new kids and stuff. And I said, no. They're all working under the umbrella of genius that the Jamaican bobsled team created here. Let's go to the root, not the fruit here.
I hear you, man. Okay. It's all good.
Devin, tell us the history. When did the Jamaican bobsled team actually begin? What year was that?
We got started in September 1987, a few months before the Olympics, which obviously were in February.
Where were the Olympics that year?
In Calgary.
Calgary. Mm-hmm. And who had the idea of creating a bobsled team in Jamaica?
Well, you got the story half right, David. It was two Americans, and they were down in Jamaica. They weren't drinking water. They were drinking some more potent suds.
Okay.
And they were discussing, you know, the popularly held belief in Jamaica that our women and athletes are the best in the world.
Okay. So they decided, is this a popular belief that has been going for a long time?
For a long time. So they wanted to put it to the test.
Okay.
And they were married, so they couldn't test the former. So they decided to put the latter, the fact that we have the best athletes in the world, to the test. And the push cart that you mentioned early on the show, we actually have those in Jamaica. We use them to sell wares in the marketplace.
Describe a push cart, if you would, Devin.
This thing is just made up of board, nailed together with four wheels. It's bearings with car tire, rubber tire wrapped around it.
Oh, so this is completely homemade, Spanky, in our
game. Oh, yes. They paint them up every year and race them down a winding mountain road. So it looks like bobsledding, except for the ice.
Okay, and this goes in between the houses and where everybody lives, correct?
Well, not quite. It's on a hillside somewhere, and if you miss a turn, you're ending up in the gully.
You're going to wind up in somebody's living room.
Yeah.
What day is this of the year, Devin? What day of this usually happen?
It's usually in the summer, you know, although we have summer all year round, but it's usually in the summer months, you know, August.
Okay, and these fellas saw this competition or this event, and they came up.
That looks like bobsledding. So, let's go get some of those sprinter guys from the Jamaica summer team and get them involved in this bobsled idea.
Okay, so some of the fellas had been in other teams, had other track and field experience or something
That was their idea, to get some of the guys from the summer team. But when they went to those guys, the response was, Bob who? Man, you know, we live in Jamaica. The only Bob we know is Bob Marley, and he's been dead. So, no, thank you.
He has nothing to do with downhill snow skiing or whatever.
Unless you're, you know, enjoying some of the green stuff we have down there. So they came to the military. I used to be in the Army.
Oh, okay.
And they came to the Army looking for athletes. And one day my colonel goes, Devon, go try out for the bobsled team.
Great adventures begin with the strangest call.
Exactly, you know. And I was like, man, you know, it's not too bad. I get off from duty.
Stop right there. Devin, did you have any idea what's involved in pro series world-class bobsledding team?
I knew that bobsledding was fast and dangerous. It was a winter sport. That's all I knew.
Okay.
And turned up for the trials. They had a couple of guys from the U.S. team who actually came down and had the selection.
Oh, okay. And were these coaches or players?
There were a couple of athletes.
Okay, they took an interest in you and your team, though, to share you with all the professional tips and secrets of the pros.
Yeah, they selected us, and the very first time we went on ice up in an ice rink in Lake Placid, and trained with the U.S. team for the very first time, seeing real bobsleds and seeing how this thing is done.
Hold on, back up. How long did you train in Jamaica before you went to where there was ice and snow and everything? How long did you guys train?
About a month.
How did you train for bobsledding in a wonderful tropical paradise like Jamaica?
Easy, man. We just turn the TV on and watch the snow come down.
What is this? I understand you had shopping carts that you were pushing through the sand?
We actually made a makeshift sled similar to the carts that we raced downhill.
Sure.
Except shaped a little bit more like a bobsled. And we would actually practice our push starts. We would do that, 3 hours every evening during the week, 6 hours on a Saturday morning, practicing back and forth on this flat concrete surface on the Army base.
Is that... That's an amazing visual. Now, is that the most important part of the race, is the push start? How important is that?
It is about 50%.
Really? You know, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that is our strength, the speed.
Ah. You know,
so we were working to our strength. We didn't have ice or enough ice. So we thought we'd work on the start, at least.
In terms of general size, the Jamaican people that I know are a pretty large and healthy bunch. How does this compare to your average European Austrian bobsledder?
Well, you know what? On the circuit, we were among the smallest guys.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. We were in the movie they spoke about John Candy putting weights in his sled and getting disqualified. Actually, you're allowed to put weights in your sled. And our sled was probably the heaviest.
This is
so light.
Well, how big is the average bobsledder, like from Europe? What they use them because of the weight or because they're stronger when they're bigger?
Well, it's a combination. So those guys, you know, easily 230, 240.
Wow.
And we were, you know, I was the biggest guy at like 200.
You guys are aerodynamic. You're built for high-speed, low drag.
Exactly.
So you trained for a month. What did you eat? Did you change your diet or anything?
No, we just ate the good Jamaican food. And the rice and beans and that kind of good stuff.
And you finally went to Lake Placid, to train there. What was that like, your first time in the freezing climate?
Well, you know, it's a myth because most people think that the Jamaican team, the first time they ever saw snow was when they bobsledded.
Okay.
But I was in the Army and I trained in England at the West Point equivalent there.
Oh, okay. What is that, Sandhurst?
Sandhurst,
yeah. Oh, okay. So you know all
so
about...
So I saw some snow and...
No, England is where they invented crappy weather.
Well, I know that. I learned that firsthand, yeah.
Okay. Had any of the other members had a familiarity with the cold and stuff like
that? Yeah, Dudley has also Sandhurst trained. Michael, I think, came here once before and saw some snow.
So this is a real nationalist effort. I did not realize you had a military background, so that really ties you into the identity of the country here.
There you go. Yeah,
that's
absolutely
spectacular stuff. How long did you train up at Placid? That's the Olympic Village up there and so forth?
Yeah, you know, we were in Placid for only a week, and then we went to Calgary.
Wow.
Yeah, and we spent about 3 weeks in Calgary, then went over to Innsbruck, Austria for another month and a half.
See the world in one fell swoop. Boom,
just like that. Bobsled speed.
And when you went to the Olympics, what was your reception there? How did people look upon you? The competing teams, the competing coaches, and share with us what was the experience
there? Overall, awesome. Totally great experience. Well, the other guys, we were just like an oddity. And I was like, the Jamaicans are here. Anyway, let's get on to the business of bobsledding.
Okay.
And for us, I was just like a kid in a candy shop, just looking. You used to hear all these names, you know, Wolfgang Hoppe, this German guy was a top driver. So you would be, I wonder if that's Hoppe. You're just like in total awe.
They were in awe of you.
And I was in awe of them. That was our first race was the Olympics.
Really?
Yes.
The first time you actually competed?
Our first international competition was
Olympic
Games.
And in the eliminations, how did you do?
Well, there are no eliminations per se. You just get started. The race is right off the bat. And in the two-man, we finished 28th, I think. And then the four-man, you know, we crashed spectacularly.
That's poetically spectacular. Are you kidding? You crashed, and then you were the heroes of the entire event.
Imagine that. Go figure.
Oh, come on. You know what? You know where America's heart is when we grow up with the thrill of victory. Nobody remembers that guy's name, but the agony of defeat.
Oh, yeah.
The ski jumper who collides. Everybody knows who that guy is. It summarizes life.
Yeah.
You grasp the success and the failure in both hands, like Muhammad Ali did. You got to have both. Got to have both.
Yep.
Now, you have been now in three different... This started off as a colorful idea, but now this is a very serious kind of issue, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know what? Can you hang on, Devin, for one more minute?
We're gonna
do a commercial here. I'm talking to Devin Harris. He's the three-time Olympian captain of the Jamaican bobsled team. We got the best in the history of the sport here. Don't go away. We're going to go downhill right after this.
All right.
Roth Radio, David Lee Roth here. Yo, I'm sitting with a very, very special guest in an Olympic time here. He's Devin Harris. He's the three-time Olympian captain of the Jamaican bobsled team. Devin, how are you this morning?
I'm doing outstanding, man. Get to hang out with a legend, you know?
A little bit of music, huh?
There you go.
A little bit of sport.
Absolutely.
What do you guys listen to when you were training? Did you listen to any kind of particular music?
You know what? It's so funny you ask that. When we were in Jamaica pushing, there was Grace Jones. She had a song. song, Pushing Up to the Bumper, Baby.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. We used to rock that thing, man.
Pull up back to the forth. Bumper, yeah. Baby.
I'm not going to sing for you, though. I can't
trying
sing.
To get down.
Yep.
I know it exactly.
You know, she's Jamaican. She actually went to school with one of my teachers.
Okay. This ties in here. Now, Devin, you you participated in three different Olympic encounters, correct?
Yes,
which
indeed.
Ones? Tell us.
You know, Calgary 88. Albertville in 92 and then Nagano in 98.
And is this now an ongoing team? Is the Jamaican bobsled team going to compete in this Winter's
Olympics?
Well,
you know what? We missed the cut this time. We've been in every Olympics since 88 and we didn't make the cut this time. We didn't qualify.
Okay, are you going to continue to try and compete though?
Oh, yeah. I'm retired.
But the nation
but
is.
The nation, definitely. We have some really awesome athletes. We won't have a Jamaican team, but we will have a Jamaican who now competes for Canada. Current world two-man champion and a legitimate medal contender as well.
Of course, when you started off with the Jamaica bobsled team back in 88, there was no real internet. It was a very different world, and now we can all look over each other's shoulders and go, hey, how do you do that? Where'd you get those shoes?
Mm-hmm.
What's this technique and whatever? So it becomes a much more competitive kind of a thing. Does Jamaica compete in all of the other sports in the Olympics as well currently, in Winter Olympics?
No, our winter program consists of bobsled.
I like it. It's kind of like Mexican food.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. What are you doing now, Devin? What do you do now on the heels of a great career like this?
Man, I work on keeping busy. I'm a motivational speaker, so I get to do quite a bit of traveling, speaking to companies across the country and a little bit around the world.
What do you tell them when you deliver a motivational speech there? What do you dwell on?
You know, I speak about the Jamaica bobsled experience. I talk about my growing up in Jamaica, and I always find a way to relate that to the challenges that the company or the organization is facing, and just tell them, strive, hold on to your dreams because they'll come true.
In your beginning, did you grow up poor, middle, or upper class?
Closer to poor.
Okay.
Very poor, actually, yeah.
And did that have a big impact on you pursuing what you had as an ambition?
Absolutely. I think, within all of us, there's this desire and drive to be better, certainly in terms of the circumstances that we find ourselves in. And that was no different with myself. I grew up in a place in Kingston called Olympic Gardens.
Interesting. And yeah. What is Olympic Gardens? Describe Olympic Gardens to us.
One of the toughest ghettos in the world, actually. I live in here in New York, and, people think the South Bronx is tough. And I say to them, where I grew up makes the South Bronx look like Central Park.
Well, this obviously had a lot to do with formatting who you are today. What was your first vision of who you were going to be? What did you want to grow up and be?
A soldier.
Really?
And that started with my grandmother, who used to tell me about these incredible feats that soldiers did. And I didn't think I could do them, but I wanted to do them. And so I grew up wanting to be in the Army. And as I grew older, I realized, man, you can actually enlist as an officer. And I go, yeah, that's what I want to do. Because there was this thing in me, I've always wanted to be at the top,
You want to be accountable for others, huh?
Absolutely.
You want to be a leader. How does one sign up for the Army in Jamaica? How did you find your way to England, to a place like Sandhurst, where the royalty also trains?
There you go. Finished high school when most of my peers were dropping out from the old neighborhood. We have a different educational system. So, I got all of the academic qualifications. Then you had to do a rigorous 3-day process to get in. It's called a selection board. 33 of us turned up. They started sending us home one by one, and at the end, three of us were selected. I was a top pick.
And then there's a symmetry to how you make it to be captain of probably one of the most famous teams in the history of the Olympics, and I say that without any exaggeration at all. You recommend the military for folks coming from a background like you do?
Absolutely. I think certainly for me personally, it was the quickest way of getting out of the ghettos. Of course, I had that dream for a while, but it also, I learned so much, about myself and had a chance to really develop character and toughness, and definitely it afforded me the opportunity to be on the bobsled team as well.
How many countries have you been in now, Devin? How many places have you been? Give me a general number.
I don't know. 12, 15, somewhere around there.
That's major. Yeah. That's rock star stuff. I'm talking to Devin Harris, 3-time Olympian. He's the captain of the Jamaican bobsled team, or he was, and he's now a motivational speaker.
And an author as well. I just wrote a children's book about the Jamaica bobsled experience called Yes, I Can. And what I try to do in the book is talk about the lessons learned from the experience, you know, believing in yourself, pursuing the dream, you know, working as a team, you know, persevering.
And in Jamaica, are the girls training as often as the guys? Are there as many girls involved in sports as the guys?
Big time. You know, I mean, one of the best and all-round female athlete of all time is Merlin Otte.
Okay.
Jamaican sprinter. In the last Olympics, she was, what, 40, 42? And she made the 200-meter finals competing against girls who were more than half her age.
Oh, this is the kind of stuff that launches countries. This is the yes. kind of stuff that makes cultural revolutions.
Completely.
Like the only thing I can think of on par with it, with the Jamaican bobsled team, is when the Iraqi football team was first launched.
That was awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah, the entire country, insurgents, terrorists, bosses, military, everybody came to a standstill.
The power of sports, though.
Wow.
The power of sports.
Yeah, that's about the only thing I can relate to, when, you know, what you've accomplished. Here. Devin Harris, thank you for joining us here. What an amazing story. The Olympic bobsled team coming out of Jamaica. He was the three-time captain. Come and join us anytime you want. Devin, happy Olympics to you.
Thank you very much.
God bless, Rev. Swing out of here. Talking about it.